disgusted and embarrassed.
The world witnessed democracy on fire and a broken criminal justice system.
The guy was white, and he was a white cop. They wouldn't have blown this up as much as they did. I just think that because they're pulling this whole race card thing.
I'm not interested in talk, I'm interested in action, and I am absolutely committed to making sure that we have a country in which everybody believes that we are equal under the law.
We are encouraged this year especially to remind ourselves that the history of the Western Hemisphere is a history of racial competition. Haiti got rid of slavery long before the United States did. And the echoes of America's long history of race can be found in the headlines of 2014, from Michael Brown in Ferguson to Eric Garner in Staten Island and Tamir Rice in Cleveland. The tension for any journalist is to distinguish what makes those events exceptions in police-community relations and what fits into a well-established pattern of police targeting of African-Americans. Ta-Nehisi Coates has made a career out of understanding those distinctions. The author and national correspondent for The Atlantic says that U.S. history is complicated, and events like Ferguson defy the yearning by so many people for some simple kumbaya moment of racial reconciliation.
You know, this shouldn't be a matter in which, you know, after this, we all come together and, you know, just hug each other and tell each other how great we are, you know, despite our, you know, differing hues. Progress and, you know, conversations about progress and achieving a level of political consciousness, this is a metaphorically violent process. Mm. I mean, physically come to blows, but, you know, it involves argument. It involves back and forth. It, you know, involves, you know, trying to get to deep truths about yourself. So I think it's fantastic. I don't know why we're actually surprised by these events. They are the logical outcome of what this country is and what this country has always been.
So how do we measure progress, if there is even a way to measure progress? Is it the decreasing decibel level of the outlaw designation? In other words, the echoes get fainter and fainter and fainter, even though they are just as tragic and just as racist, but they're getting less and less and less as time goes on. We're not lynching today, but mm-hmm. we're killing Aaron Garner today. Or what is it?
I don't know. I mean, I that's a question I grapple with myself. It is, definitely a good thing that you can no longer put someone's child on an auction block and sell them. That's a definite.
I'll go with that.
Right? Yeah. That's a good thing.
Right.
You know, certainly, you know, that the idea of an African-American president was unimaginable to 50 years ago. And, the numbers of white people who voted for an African-American was unimaginable years ago. At the same time, one has to balance that with the fact that African-Americans are today and have always been the most segregated minority in this country by you know, a huge, huge margin. One has to measure that against the fact that when you look at the relative wealth and the sort of neighborhoods that the quote-unquote average black upper middle class family lives in, a family that makes about $100,000, let's say, they tend to live in the kind of housing that a white family that makes about $30,000 lives in. You have to look at the yawning wealth gap, the fact that for every dollar of wealth that, you know, white families in this country have, African-Americans have about 5 cents. So I don't know where that puts us. I guess I can say there has been progress. I guess I'm comfortable with that, you know, but I would call it the kind of progress wherein, you know, you've been beating somebody for a long period of time and you stop beating them and now they're in the hospital. I mean, that's certainly progress, right? I mean, it's better to, you know, be in the hospital, being kind of treated than to be on the ground, you know, getting your head kicked in. But you're still in a dire state.
Yeah, and I'm not, you know, trying to demand that you, you know, concede that there's been progress. Mm-hmm. I'm more interested in—
No, I really think there has. I think you're correct. Yeah. I think I would go with that.
But I think what's even more relevant is where do you look for it in terms of mm-hmm. the conversation post-Ferguson? We talk to a lot of people who say education is the key, you know, and I kind of go, well—
What does that mean?
Exactly. Everybody says that. Right. I mean, I could look there for 10,000 years and see nothing.
Right.
But where do I look to see people coming together? Trust between police and people in the African-American community. Where do you even look for that? It's not something you can mine like silver or gold.
No, and frankly, I don't think it's anything you should expect in the immediate future, and perhaps not even in your lifetime, you know, perhaps not even in your children's lifetime. The level of trust between the police departments of America and the black community mirrors pretty closely probably the amount of trust that most Americans have in black Americans. I mean, this is, you know, pretty clear. If you look at, like, you know, there are any number of studies that, you know, research stereotypes and what assumptions people make about black people, especially young black men. And the assumption that, you know, young black men walking the streets are up to no good is not an uncommon assumption to be made. Not talking about the police departments, just in general. At the same time, if you look at the institutions that most Americans tend to trust, I think last time I looked, it was like small business or the military was number one. And right after that was the police department. Obviously, if you took a poll in the African-American community, the feelings would be different. So, you know, the thing is, the police are an outgrowth of the country that they serve. And so the expectation that somehow they would be more understanding than your normal, you know, average American, you know, I think it just assumes too much. I also think it's kind of shifting the blame, you know, away from people where we don't have to deal with our own stuff. We can talk about body cameras.
And there was so much to talk about with Ta-Nehisi. There was the Bill Cosby story. Back in 2008, Coates profiled the celebrity, but basically chose to ignore the rape allegations that are today transforming Cosby, the comedian and culture voice, into Cosby, the sexual predator. Ta-Nehisi says it has all taught him that celebrity symbols and role models are often just dressed up lies.
Yeah, no, it's been a very, very interesting story as I've, you know, written about. I, you know, have my own sort of role in that as a reporter and not being, you know, as aggressive as I wish I'd been, not being true to, frankly, what I was taught, you know, as a young journalist, about how to be aggressive about, you know, truths and spaces that people don't want to go. And, you know, I have to say, for me, like, there's a lot to be learned from that. Because frankly, like I spend a lot of time, you know, sort of just pushing people to go to places they don't want to go. Specifically, I would say, given my readership at The Atlantic, mostly pushing white people, you know, into places that they don't want to go. And what that experience reminds you of, or lets you directly experience, something that you know to be true, and that is the reason why people don't want to go certain places. It's not because they're white. It's not because they're men. It's not because they're black. It's because, in general, as human beings, you know, when we have to go to these dark places that require some sort of level of courage, for instance, confronting a guy whose popularity was off the chain, I mean, in black community, white community, wherever, and say, you know, this guy isn't what you think he is, like on the deepest level, not just, as I said, I disagree with what he's saying.
About hip-hop.
Right. Not just, I hate that he says, you know, pull up your pants. You know, but then on some deep fundamental level, this person might not be who you think he is. That requires a level of courage. You know, it really does.
What's the courage there? I mean, I, as a journalist, I can see how it's scary to confront a popular celebrity. But is there anything in this about how there's a code, you don't criticize black men?
No, in no respect. I mean, I get that from some people from time to time. You know, anytime you offer some sort of criticism of President Obama, who is not, you know, Bill Cosby, and who really is under siege from certain forces. Here's what I think. To be a journalist and to, you know, like, go soft in that sort of way, it actually does a disservice, not just to your subject, but it actually does a disservice to that community who you allegedly are protecting. Because what you are saying is, you guys can't handle the truth. You guys actually can't handle a nuanced conversation. Now, the other side of that is, I think what people feel is, well, people who don't have our best interests in heart will then go and then use that information against us. But that pretends that those people weren't using it anyway. That pretends that those people are taking their cues, you know, from some little black writer over here. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not. They're going to do what they're going to do. And we have to have, you know, a conversation, you know, in our community, nevertheless, without fear.
Ta-Nehisi Coates is a national correspondent for The Atlantic.